Hello, extra time.
Very important to the league not to get a hold because it damages your reputation. It makes people, when they read it, just laugh at you.
The single club, they're playing in the League One, and they're playing in the Europa League, and they're credit.
You're very welcome along to the Extra Time.ie Sportscast with me, Declan Martin. We've got a very busy show this week. Mark Darfers joins me here in studio. He's been speaking, I think, probably the first interview I've seen, actually, with Shamrock Rovers 2 manager Aidan Price. Dave Donnelly's going to join us on the line later on for an extensive WNL preview getting underway this weekend. Dave's been speaking to Laura Heffernan of Shelburne and Graeme Kelly of DLR Waves, so we'll have those for you later as well. McDara, delighted you're able to make it into us, first of all. We're sitting here in the midst. It started off as a bit of a joke of, oh, how are we going to record the podcast? Are we all going to have to bring the sleeping bags and stay in studio when COVID-19 breaks out? But we're not really at that point anymore, and we actually have to start making plans, and the podcast is the least of everyone's worries at this point.
Business continuity plan's been broken out a lot of the place. But no, it is... It is a pretty serious issue. Like, the Slovakia-Ireland game is going to be played behind closed doors. Potentially maybe not played at all. I don't know what might happen in the next couple of weeks. No handshakes before any of the games this weekend. The FAI have asked
us. Were you to do errors even when you came in studio?
Yeah, we just bowed to one another. But that's what we
normally do.
You know? So, but maybe just to lighten it up, I had two thoughts. I saw some countries have asked for gatherings not to happen of more than 1,000. So obviously Premier Division matches will be off, but average in the First Division is only about 600. So we go ahead of that. And then I know there's a lot of Liverpool fans worried they mightn't get win the league title. I think they're only maybe two wins away, or depending on how Man City get on this week. But, you know, I think Shamrock Rovers should just be handed the league title at this stage. Like Duckworth Lewis in cricket. No, they're top of the league.
You said you were going to lighten the mood. There's going to be a fair few fans who are going to be really wound up by your
there's people throwing their
phones. You're live at the Apollo style.
throwing their phones out the window. But
in all seriousness though, just as we're starting to record here, we've had a statement from Linfield, who I think is, what, two or three games left in the Northern Irish Premiership season. This is really, really brief, but essentially Linfield FC can confirm that one of our players has tested positive for coronavirus. The club is taking advice from the relevant authorities and will provide an update when we have further details. So, yeah, pretty worrying. I mean, I think we're overall in Ireland, we're starting to feel the effects of it now, and people are starting to come to terms with what's going to have to be done in the next few weeks. As you mentioned, the international game against Slovakia now behind closed doors, it will be very, very difficult to look too far forward as to what's going to happen with a lot of this. So we don't want to just reiterate what you're probably hearing on a bunch of other podcasts or news. And also, I will reiterate, don't listen to sports podcasts and sports broadcasters for your sort of insight on COVID-19 and stuff like that.
There's plenty of expertise.
Actual experts.
On,
But what we'll try and probably do between myself and yourself is talk about, well, the really damaging effect this could have on League of Ireland clubs. Because we know this does potentially mean games behind closed doors. And that probably means a long period without fans at games. Well, it does mean that, and obviously will mean that incomes for clubs will be really badly hit.
Yeah, and there's a piece on the 42.ie this evening with Aidan McNellis, who's the board member with Finn Harps, and, you know, the talking about games behind closed doors, you know, he's quoted as saying, you know, we'd almost certainly have to fold in that scenario unless there was outside assistance.
That's disastrous, like.
Yeah.
Do you think that's realistic, though? Like, I suppose it's very general. We don't really know what can happen or how long we're looking at. I suppose it's all projected, but I didn't think it would be immediately met with, yeah, we're going to have to fold. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, if the season is put on hold, or matches are maybe played behind closed doors where matches go ahead, players need to be played, they're working, and yet there's no income. But I think, I don't know whether we want to fuel kind of idle speculation, but it is just, you know, things are obviously unfolding pretty quickly. Mm. You know, the matches have been suspended in Serie A, I think Austria as well. You know, there's matches been played behind closed doors in Champions League this evening. And, you know, while there wouldn't be gathering of spectators behind closed doors, but, you know, someone scores a goal, are you just going to celebrate by slowly walking back to the halfway line? But
well,
not congratulating
just pretend
your teammate.
It's VAR style now and walk back, you know what I mean? But even, you mentioned the Serie A situation, and again, I want to focus on our league for the most part, but even what that means for Euro 2020 down the line, and again, all this kind of fixture congestion and talk about this is it should be to the back of people's minds in the really serious issues, but at the same time, it is something that has to be discussed. So I know Serie A do want Euro 2020 pushed back further so they can complete, because they essentially don't want to cancel their season. And I imagine most leagues are a bit the same. Would it be quite as big a problem here, given that we're more than used to absolutely horrendous fixture scheduling? And I mean, I go back to the Sligo. When I heard you mentioned this to me about Harps a little bit earlier on today, and I was thinking to myself, was there not a time when we talked to someone from Sligo, maybe involved in the coaching or a player, and we talked about 2 months without a home game?
There was certainly a long period. And
so they're being tested for this in advance. But more so, the League of Ireland is more ready for this than most other clubs. Yeah. Because
there's one Premier Division club this month in March who only has one home game. So
there you go.
The way the fixtures, when it comes around to the mid-season break in the League of Ireland, you've nearly played 2/3 of the league fixtures. So there is potential scope to do what happens in the first half of the season and shoehorn in a lot of Monday fixtures. And you know, we saw them... in the last couple of weeks, there's more Monday fixtures to come soon enough. So, depending on what way the FAI have done for the FAI Cup fixtures is they've freed up the weekend. In the past, they would have played league games also on FAI Cup weekends as it moves towards the latter half of the competition. But this time they don't. So if you get out of the good news, maybe if you're dumped out of the cup, is actually you could play some league fixtures and they have done as well. Whether the season could go on into November, into December, but listen, that's wild speculation at this stage.
I suppose most countries, you mentioned the FAI there, is there really a lot they can do at this point?
Because
I know they're going to be an organisation that garners criticism a lot over the next while. Obviously, we can't blame them for COVID-19. No. Although, it does seem if there was going to be revenge to had by a certain CEO, this might have been. Wow. But look, I'm not...
They were out quick to say, right, there'll be no handshakes.
Yeah.
There was the statement on Monday evening that they were looking at the situation for the Slovakia game. Obviously, but the FAI, no more than any business around the country, will be taken... Mm-hmm. Their advice from the Department of Health and
the idea that they'd have some sort of contingency ready for this would be absolutely fanciful. But at the same time, if there is a danger of clubs folding, and I know that sounds extreme, but you know, you'd expect that there has to be something on their part done, because ultimately they will be responsible for helping these teams out.
The government have put a kind of a bailout package, if you like, a health bailout package in place, you know, guaranteeing a certain amount for sick league, and we're probably in a better situation than maybe some other countries where, you know, we do have statutory sick leave, but they're putting things in place. But you know, the FAI will go with the advice that they're given, and that also ties into, well, what can they maybe potentially claim back on insurance and you know, from travel point of view as well. So we'll wait and see.
Right, well, let's talk a little bit about the action then.
Can we talk about football yet, please?
Yeah, we don't want to keep talking about this. Let's start with one of the Dublin Derby, Shells versus Bows. Playing to a full house in Dalymount looked quite a decent fixture. I saw some of the highlights for this one. It looks to me like Shells will be annoyed. They had plenty of chances for this one. A lot of tame headers. It was like watching the same opportunity played time and time again. Some of them right at McGuinness in the end. Ultimately, it was the two goals in the second half that did them. Andrew Wright nodding into... He was set up by Chris Twardek, who seems to be quite central to everything Bowles do at the moment.
He's been really good. I've seen him a couple of times this season. And
even quite a lot last season for Sligo,
highlights.
Even.
Yeah, and we're, as well as having our top scorer list on xtreme.ie, we're also tracking assists, and he's up there for the start of the season as well. So yeah, I think he's been a really good acquisition, and Wright took his goal well as well.
And if you were going by the, you know, the match stats that they do now, it's not that he had the assist for the second goal, but he had the major pass, whatever you call it, the one that set up the assist nearly when he put it to the back post. Can't remember who squared it back into Mandrew. I don't even know if Mandrew got the header. You know, looking at that one, it might have been.
Yeah, they were debating as to whether they got
over
the line.
Yeah, I can't tell. I've looked at it a couple of times. Shell's maybe going to suffer a few of these this season. When they coming right up like that, you're always going to have a few of these kind of middling games where it looked like it really could have gone either way that game. And ultimately, maybe the lack of prolific goal scorer for Shells in that they'll probably share. I think we've said this a few times. They'll probably share goals right around that team more so than have one prolific player. And this is the kind of game where that'll cost them, I would think.
I think Shells are probably reasonably happy with how they have started. From a supporter point of view, I think this was a game they were probably really looking forward to. They were maybe angling for a bit of revenge after the FAI Cup defeat, having led 2-0 in Dalymount. But having toiled for so long in the First Division, to have like a Dublin derby up the road in Dalymount Park, something they're probably looking forward to. Result didn't go their way, but you know, I think they've started reasonably well, and plenty for them to build on.
Another week of insanely good goals elsewhere. You had Stephen Mallon making a bit of a habit now, the way he's playing for Derry at the moment. He looks really quick and agile from anything I've seen from him so far. Really nice finish on his part, but it was overshadowed by not just one, but two Waterford goals. Firstly, Sam Bowen smashing in from his left foot outside the box. Is he left foot, Sam Bowen? I didn't. Maybe he is. Maybe he is left foot. I didn't think he was. And then Shane Griffin with, I don't really know how you describe his goal. It was like a gliding, dipping effort from about 30 to 40 yards.
Yeah, right at the end to win the game.
Yeah.
And win a tweet out from none other than Martina Navratilova. You know, multiple tennis Grand Slam champion with just a wow. And there's Griffin's goal.
What am I missing here? What on earth is the connection there?
I don't know. These just things go. Well, maybe she saw Flores' goal last week and went, this league is just ripping it up. I'm going to follow. And
I'm going to follow Waterford.
Yeah.
I'm going to follow Soccer Republic. Imagine getting that notification from Soccer Republic.
Yeah.
Martina, however you say it, has followed you. Like, all right, fair enough. In terms of, let's talk briefly just about Rovers and then Dundalk, because obviously that's the two teams we're going to keep an eye on as the league progresses and as the title challenge goes on. Rovers, you were there for the 3-2 winning at Sligo. A little bit tighter than you would have liked.
No, I think if you saw the results, that's maybe what you think. A lot of people would have seen it was the live game on Air Sport on Saturday evening, but Rovers dominated. Shamrock Rovers, I should say, dominated.
Are you telling me there was a bit of a chant about this?
Oh, well, yeah, the away section was chanting that there's only two fucking Rovers. Are we allowed cursing this podcast?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Reference obviously to the second team. We'll talk about that later on. But Shamrock Rovers dominated the first half. Jack Byrne got a really good goal, and really they should have led by more. Paul McLaughlin gave Sligo a bit of a lifeline with a late penalty award. Looked maybe a little bit dubious, but Roberto Lopez kind of hung a leg in there, and David Cawley went down. So they equalised 1-1 at half-time, and you know, the home team were probably better certainly in the first half of the second period, and it's probably a game that Shamrock Rovers might have drawn or lost. They don't have a very good record down the Shoguns in recent years, but
the difference this year with the fact that they're going to be a bit more clinical, a bit more headstrong in games like this, it feels like, and probably that, I mean, looking at the lineups, we had Gaffney and Green both starting, and I think I spoke to, I'm not sure if it was yourself or Dave, because somebody said to me, I don't think they'd play together a lot.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I thought they linked up quite nicely, actually, for the brief period they played together in the Dundalk game, and I was wondering how vital that will be.
Well, so Stephen Bradley went with essentially a 3-5-2 on Saturday, which he played very early on in his managerial career.
There was a Bohemians. It worked quite well at times.
The game against Bohemians where Sean Boyd
worked in Europe.
Yeah. So they were kind of making similar runs. I think the difference on Saturday night was Dylan Watts came on, and Watts, he didn't have a great season last year. I think he maybe found it difficult because he wasn't playing as regularly as when he was signed midway through the previous season. He was really good, came into the team and played regularly. But he scored against Dundalk. He came off the bench and set up the two goals, and that was the difference.
I didn't think he was magnificent now against Dundalk, I have to say. I know he got the goal.
Yeah.
He looked, again, playing in behind Green quite a lot of the time, with Jack Byrne maybe sometimes making runs into the area that he would be or would be expected to go. So I wonder, is there still a bit of finding the right position or finding himself in the right bit of space there? But it does seem like he's become a bit more important, at least, to the team.
Yeah.
And at least if he's going to contribute and you know, with important goals like that, ultimately goals that'll help win games, I don't think you're going to have any qualms with
it. No, well, that's what you want. When you make a change, you want to... It's not a like-for-like substitution. And then people probably saw the fact that Aaron Green, against one of his many former clubs, when he did score, somebody threw a snack box, it looks like, at him. And I don't know, you know, picking up a chip and eating it, maybe not great in terms of, we're talking about a health crisis at the minute, but But Niall Moran then got a nice goal in injury time, well taken goal. But, you know, tough for Sligo now. That's not a great start to the season at all. And yeah, you look at the scoreline, you think 3-2. But
late goal as well.
They really
probably flatters them a bit more.
I think so.
Dundalk, 4-0 winners as well. All pretty straightforward for them. Hooban on target again, starting to look like he's starting to look like he's enjoying himself at this stage, no matter what defence he's playing against. Thought he took his goal against Rovers very well. Thought he took his two goals against Harps very well. Although they did at times, unfortunately, make it easy. You get often, as I spoke to Ollie last week, and he was saying, look, they've beaten us quite well in quite a few games up here. Although we did get a draw at this time last season against them. And I think you just kind of felt off the back of a defeat to Shamrock Rovers, they wouldn't be slipping up again. So a pair of goals from Hooban, that sloggy goal probably... again, maybe just flatters it a little bit. It was disastrous right at the end. That's like a call. So not quite sure. But again, you know, straight back to winning ways.
Yeah, and they've also just confirmed signing today of Nathan Adua, I think that's how you pronounce it. Another striker. You know, was at Spurs Academy before. So now he's played around that. He loan spells it. I'm just reading here. Luton Town, Rangers, Colchester United and Peterborough. So
I saw the byline or maybe possibly the headline of just somewhere that had tweeted it out, and him basically a quote from him saying, you know, we don't hear much talk in England about the League of Ireland, but the facilities, you know, are amongst not the best in Europe, but they're European class
Was he talking about Oriel Park, was he?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And when I saw that quote as well, I thought, I've had so many of them on this podcast where you're like, right, I just want to start this interview off at a, so did you hear anything about the league ever? No, I just like the facilities. So there you go.
He's out of contract, which is why I think he was training with Dundalk. The reports were he was training with them last week, and just gives them another option. But yeah, looking at the, you know, Shamrock Rovers 5 wins out of 5, Dundalk 4 out of 5. I don't know where we see if anyone is going to come and push those two closely. I don't think so.
Looks unlikely. Just very quickly then, the last game. We'll talk more about the First Division next week, but we should talk about Pat's Billy King. Nice little goal for them.
Another player who's looked really good in the opening bit of the season.
Deserved a tweet from the tennis player, I thought, that goal. I thought it was a bit bad that she didn't even join
maybe
in.
Billie Jean King should have been. Okay.
But just very briefly on this one as well, more outside of the pitch from our own point of view. I spotted an interesting story on Twitter during the week about the FAI apparently sending a cease and desist to lads doing sort of voluntary commentary for the game. I understand that it's voluntary anyway and not a commercial outfit. I imagine the club would have had to give their consent for that, given that these lads have supposedly been doing it quite a long time. So pretty disappointing to see an element of that. I mean, obviously the FAI have commercial arrangements, but it feels a little bit at the moment with some of this stuff, you do need to be careful with sort of coming in and given the FAI's reputation, sort of standing on the toes of volunteers or people who've you know, for a very long time tried to help boost or aid the culture of any of these clubs, or not even the culture, I suppose, that add to the viewership, listenership. And it is different than sort of illegal streaming or anything like that, this kind of thing. So I don't know. I'm very disappointed to see stuff like that. I hope whatever's going on with that at the moment hopefully gets sorted out, because it you know, this kind of stuff, it's a reason we have the sort of, although slightly spoofy, a jokey hashtag greatest league in the world, is a reason, and it is down to the fans and people getting involved with ways like this. So very disappointing to see that. Hopefully that's not the case. The one brief bit of talk, and First Division fans will be fuming, not just at your jibe earlier, but that the one bit of coverage they're going to get this week is probably on developmental squad versus Cabo. And that's because you got down to talk to Aidan Price. I say that, of course, jokingly. And we talk on the pettiness. You talked to Aidan about the pettiness of all this kind of trouble in the bit we're about to play. But how was that?
Yeah, it was down to Strabag. Hadn't been there for a while, so we were well looked after. Bit difficult to see the action down the far end of the pitch when the press box is in the bar behind one of the goals, but. But hey, the pitch wasn't great. It never is good at this time of season. They're using it for rugby until the season is Blackrock College obviously play out of there. But so it was a tricky enough surface. So Rovers certainly were trying to play the football. You can hear Aidan Price kind of talked about that. The threat from Cam Teeley, that was coming from both left and right wing with long throws. They've quite a threat from there as well. So, and did they deserve the win? They probably did. They got a 91st minute winner just at the end to get all 3 points. But yeah, I talked to Aidan Price afterwards just to talk about the makeup of the squad. So there's about 12 players that are from the Rovers under 19 team from last season. There's 8 players who are eligible to play kind of under 21 who are named in the first division squad, who are also in the Stephen Bradley's first team squad. So
right.
The most high profile of them would be Neil Ferrugia, but Brandon Kavanagh is in there as well, and he'd scored the previous week against Galway United. And then they seemingly, the agreement is they're able to play one overage player as well as an outfield player. So Leon Poles, who's Alan Manus's deputy, he played the first 2 games. But I think the arrangement, because the second team were playing Friday night and the first team were playing on Saturday, I think it's maybe a bit easier when it's the other way around, that if someone isn't involved with the first team on a Friday night, they might be able to play on a Saturday afternoon when Rovers play their home games. So so, and then I asked Aidan Price just about, like, when Rovers 2 made their debut back in the first game of the season down in Longford. It was pretty petty, I felt. Longford didn't put Shamrock Rovers 2 on the front cover. They literally put a hangman's dash in one of the articles so they wouldn't have to say Shamrock Rovers. And I just felt it was a little bit unfair. The crowds are going to be small for Shamrock Rovers 2 games. I've said that before, and having attended them on Friday evening, it was a lot of Rovers fans who live in the Dunleary Borough. But it was also a lot of friends and family of the players. There would have been players who made their League of Ireland debut in Longford that evening, and normally the away dressing room would get a match programme and the players would take a programme with them. And there's the memento, and they're not even listed. And I just thought, you know, so Pat Devlin had a nice quote welcoming Shamrock Rovers 2 and Aidan Price. And I just think, I know they're playing under protest, and in the Cabin Tealy programme, they had an article and they did discuss it. But I think the phrase we'd use in our family is, I think they let themselves down. But maybe people are angry with me.
You're going to have so many angry responses. Well, but I do understand what you mean. I mean, I think probably waging war on the wrong people there, yeah, to an extent.
Well, it's getting the publicity, and there's been that comment as well.
Exactly. As a Limerick fan, I think there's you know, a share of blame to go around down that way. But yeah, like, it's an interesting chat. We'll get to the chat with Aidan now in a second. But it is an interesting chat because you touch on, I mean, in the few short few weeks, it's been a big story. And not only that, all the hypothermia kind of stuff that went with it, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
it's been a rocky road so far. It's kind of interesting to see where it will end a little bit further down the line, you know.
Yeah, and then just a couple of things to note. I was kind of a bit unsure whether Max Murphy, who lined out for the Rovers 2 side on Saturday, on Friday night, was he on loan? But actually, no, he's been signed from Stoke City. But Sean Brennan, who was with Longford last year, is still on the books at Southampton, but he's on loan. So and then there's one player from Bowes, a guy called Peter Adigan, who
right,
Aidan Price has signed as well. So they've played 3 games, they've just drawn one, but like conceded a late winner against Galway in those off conditions, when thankfully I think everyone is okay. There was, you know, a couple were suspected hypothermia, maybe some frostbite. But thankfully that was okay. But I think Cabin Tealy have started well. Like, that's 3 wins out of 3. They had a good win.
Preview that people were overlooking them little bit.
Beat Bray, I think it was 4-2 on the opening night. Yeah. Really good goals. The 3-1 win down in Athlone. And have some good. They've quite a big squad as well. Mm. So and made it through in the Leinster Senior Cup on the Sunday against Crumlin. Anyway, they played Friday night and then played Sunday afternoon, so a big enough squad that they have as
great.
Well.
Great. Well, look, we'll do more First Division chat a little bit further down the line. We're going to hear this chat from McDyre with Aidan Price in just a moment. Make sure to stick around. We've got the WNL preview with Dave Donnelly coming up in just a few moments' time as well. Daniel Carr, great to have you on. Are you enjoying your time here so far?
Yeah, so far. I've been loving it. I mean, loving it so far.
Will I give that one another go? The phone followed it.
Yeah.
log on to extratime.ie.
Must be a little bit difficult to take an injury time winner after the team had played so well. I suppose you were looking to get your second point of the season.
Yes, it's always a difficult situation when it happens in the way it did, but I don't think we can be too critical of the boys. I thought they were they're showing their qualities, albeit in difficult conditions on a poor pitch. I thought they stood up and are making a name for themselves in a positive manner.
I thought they played some nice football. They looked to get the ball down the play, as you say, on a difficult pitch, but looked to pass it around, some nice touches, kind of beat men when they could, and I suppose that's what you're trying to get from these young players.
Yeah, it is, like, because they're a big physical side, so they had to match that side of the game first, which I thought they'd done really well. Albeit Cabin Teely had an awful lot of set pieces, and ultimately we could see it from one at the end, but I thought the only side that played when they had the opportunity was ourselves, and I know we're trying to play in the right areas, but it's a big learning curve for us, but I think they're learning on the job, which is all we can ask.
And Cabin Teely had great threats with a long throw, both from the left and the right, and as you say, the physically your team were able to stand up, and it was just finally Cabin Teely managed to make one of those count, one of the crosses late in the game that they were able to make it stick.
We've seen their two games, and it's been a big part of their games against both Bray and Athlone. I think they got two goals off long throw-ins against Bray on the first day of the season, so we were expecting it. We knew they were coming in from both sides, but I thought we did deal with it, but ultimately they're just playing for their mistakes, and we probably an error at the end cost us in the game. But again, can't be critical. We're trying to be positive. Players are making decisions to be positive, and they are going to make mistakes trying to be positive, so that's all we ask of them, is to make their minds up early and go with their goal, and that's what they've done today. But I thought to a man, I thought throughout the game they were excellent.
And you were only able to name six players on the bench. Was that a little bit, were a couple of players down after last weekend's match in the awful conditions in Dala, or?
No, we don't feel we need to have 18 players on the pitch. The first team played tomorrow night as well, so they're obviously any players that has played for us over the last couple of weeks are obviously the first priority is the first team's game tomorrow evening on the way to Sligo, so it gives us an opportunity for other players. So we had players from our under 17s national league team today. Darren McGuinness gets on and makes impressions and makes a name for himself, so albeit it's nice to have first team players as well, so other players give some opportunities, and I thought someone took them today.
And just asking about last weekend's game, had you been involved in anything like that before, where the weather conditions just kind of closed in and seemed to be pretty it didn't seem to be too serious in the end, thankfully, but it potentially could have been.
I've never seen conditions like that, to be honest. I don't know if I've probably played in conditions as bad, but I think it was more the wind chill that was blown across that really affected the players, but we didn't really have a bearing on how bad it was until after the game, and we seen the way the players were, so thankfully all are okay, but it was definitely an experience.
Yeah, and you have a couple of players, I think Max Murphy's one, and Sean Brennan's another, who are on loan, so is that something that...
Sean Brennan is a player that's on loan, Max Murphy is signed for us.
Okay.
Yeah, so Max Murphy's with us, Sean Brennan's on loan with us for the year, so it's a chance for him to get good game time, and I know he played with Longford last year, but he brings a little bit of experience, although he is only 18 years of age, you can see on a bumpy, bobbly pitch there today, he's still shown his quality and backs himself, which is what I've seen in him since he was probably 11 or 12 years of age playing for Belvedere.
And you're three games in now, like, in terms of it's obviously about player development with this team, and like, what are you looking to get from the squad this season? Is it to try and get more players involved in the first team? Obviously you want the results to go your way as well. Like, no one's out to it's not a kickabout out there. Like, you could see kind of the disappointment of the players there when they let that goal in. But what's your kind of aim for the season?
Well, you can see it, as you say, you can see the disappointment when players are losing games, and that's that's the mentality that we want them to have. Like, you know, we're trying to instill in them, whether they've been with us since they're 11 or 12 years of age, or whether they're with us only a couple of months, like, that it means something to play for Shamrock Rovers. And no matter who, no matter what team are playing against you, they want to up their game and they want to beat you. And you see probably there's more people here today at Cabin Peel game to see what Shamrock Rovers is about as much as anything. So I think the players are just, what we want from the players is just for them to go and show the belief that we feel we have in them. They need to be exposed, I suppose, at the right times to see if they're to help their in their development.
Yeah.
Not for us just to see if they're okay for it, but it's about, we know they're going to have disappointments and we know they're going to have setbacks, and we can only judge them on how they respond to those as much as anything else, because we have to expect them to make those mistakes. So that's our main aim, is to see how many players we can get ready for our first team. In an environment where they are going to be tested in other ways than they would be tested in a 17s or a 19s match.
What's the training arrangement for this team? Are they training in the morning in around the first team, or is it the evening?
No, they train in the evenings, train 4 days a week in the evenings. So their commitment has been really good, so there's been no problems on that end.
Yeah, and I suppose you've the senior match tomorrow, as you said, and kind of Rovers, but there's a lot of football happening around the club. Mm. But at Rovers last week, the 7,500 at Tallaght Stadium against Dundalk, and there's a great buzz, I think, around the club with the two teams as well. It must be great to be part of it.
Oh, it absolutely is. And even some of the publicity that comes from the chaos that was last Saturday with our game against Galway, like, you know, has been positive, because we showed that we're trying to do things properly. Like, you know, we were prepared for something that we didn't even know we needed to be prepared for. The success, I suppose, of the first team definitely has an effect on what they do on the pitch. Definitely has an effect on everybody else around the club. Like, you know, and we're trying to make players prepare for that, because the more success the first team have, the better our players will need to be part of that. But they've shown they are capable of it. Like, you know, we've had a lot of players that are knocking on the door for that first team, and they've helped, I'm sure, the environment that they're in. So we just want to build on that momentum, I suppose, and make sure that disappointments like last minute goals here today don't knock us, but only something that we can learn from and strive to improve.
And there was a good welcome for Shamrock Rovers this evening. The name was on the front cover of the programme. What did you make of some of the stuff? Or are you just, well, it's just all about your squad and what you're trying to do with your team?
Absolutely has no, like, if people want to be petty, they can be petty, like, but we're not trying to do it to say, look what we have. We're trying to do it because we feel there's opportunities for us to help our players, and that's all it's for, like, you know. So we're not in any position to say, like, why is he doing this? What we're trying to do is what we feel is the right things for our players to do. And if we can test them in an environment at the right time, if we can take them back out and give them a breather and then let them go again, that's what we try to do. And hopefully that will help Irish football on a whole, not just our own club.
Sounds good. Aidan, listen, thanks a million.
Thanks very much.
Yes, lads, it's David Moyler. The song I did for my initiation was Sugar Hill Gang, Rapper's Delight. It goes a hip, hop, a heavy to the hip hop. You don't stop the rock to the bam bam boogie, to up jump the boogie to the rhythm of the boogie to beat. I'm more of a FIFA man, I'm awful at Fortnite. It goes a hip, hop, a heavy to the hip hop. You don't stop the rock to the bam bam boogie, to up jump the boogie to the rhythm of the boogie to beat. I don't hate Alan Pardew, even though he did headbutt me. It goes a hip, hop, a heavy to the hip hop. You don't stop the rock to the bam bam boogie, to up jump the boogie to the rhythm of the boogie to beat. Now what you hear is not a test, I'm repping to the beat. And me the groove, and it's gone. Bye.
On day 25 of his self-quarantine, Dave Donnelly joins us once again on the line. Dave, thanks for taking the call.
No matter.
How are you keeping? Are you still convinced that you're doing this for everyone else's good and not for your own?
That's it. Running out of toilet paper.
What is this obsession with fucking toilet paper? Anyway, it's time for a bit of a WNL preview, so I had to get you on, obviously, as our sort of leading expert with that. Before we get into previewing the teams, I mean, I should mention we've got a pair of interviews. from DLR Waves, Graham Kelly, and also Shell's Laura Heffernan. We spoke to Laura before, actually, so good to for you to get another word with her. Back when she was involved with Wexford, I think it was. So let's start off, I suppose, talking about the restructuring of the league before we get into maybe previewing the teams and the games, because it's important to talk about the new kids on the block, Bowes, Athlone, and to an extent Treaty United. For those unaware, that's formerly Limerick FC. Obviously the same team. It's pretty much the same team, I think I'm right in saying, Dave, as last year, but with another group as opposed to with Munster Holdings Limit or whatever it's called now. So we'd better talk about the potential of these three teams coming in without getting into the teams too much. How does this change the setup of the league? It essentially gives us what? A 9-team league now with less games because they're playing each team twice rather than the three times as before.
Yeah, so they've expanded it to 9 teams, as you say, 2.5 new teams. So they've switched from 3 games each, which obviously is the same in the men's first division. It can kind of cause a bit of an imbalance in terms of some teams are playing, you know, have a better fixture list than other teams. So it does even it out on that score. But, 16 games instead of 21 games probably isn't ideal, especially with no kind of no shield competition in the middle of it. So it's probably going to lead to a few kind of 4 or 5 week absences for teams. But I suppose it's from the other point of view, it is fairer. So I think teams are sort of taking it in a sanguine manner.
Do you think that's what I was going to ask? Do you think this is a positive step then, or are the teams taking it as a positive step? Because I mean most football fans, and certainly us, we've had so many talks about league structures and shuffling numbers in the midst of a lot of change. It always feels a little bit pointless, I think.
Yeah, well, I think in the case of this league, it's slightly different in the sense that there's an under-17s league with teams from around the country. Like Sligo Rovers, Bray are going to be in it next year. Shamrock Rovers going to be in it next year. So there is potential for growth there. So I don't think it's a case where it's going to be, you know, 9 teams for the foreseeable future. I think the whole idea of it is to bring as many teams on board, and maybe down the line at some point have maybe 10 or 12 teams where you could have a bit more of a settled division there, and a consistent fixture list that kind of works for everybody. And I think Graham kind of touches on it in the interview. Actually, I don't want to ruin it too much, but the league does need more teams, and particularly in the absence of an under-19s league as a step between under-17s and senior level. There is a lot of players who are kind of hitting 17, 18, and they wouldn't otherwise have a team. So the fact that there is an extra team now in the Women's National League is a positive in terms of just actually getting players competitive football and consistent competitive football. So it's good from that end, and I think there is capacity and scope for that to be expanded in future years, whether it's Sligo probably be the big one that the FAI would want to get in, but certainly Bray Wanderers and Shamrock Rovers might have designs on that in the future too.
You never know, there might even be another Shamrock Rovers 2 after a bit of time, you will see. You mentioned the first division, I suppose it mirrors the start we've had with the WNL in terms of it being a little bit delayed in terms of fixture list coming out and issues around Bowes getting their license quite late on. So as you said, it sort of mirrors the first division in that way. I realise it is early doors for the new FAI, and they aren't really in a position to start making massive commitments outside of, I suppose, international football. But what's been the start off there like? Because it seems like it was off to a rocky enough start in terms of everything running smoothly, just like it was the first division. Is there a bit more of a feeling at all that there will be a bit more attention paid to the WNL this year?
I wouldn't bank on it, just in the sense that they've already lost their sponsor, Saw Hotels, who sponsored it last year, have seemingly aren't going to be involved this year, whether they're involved in a behind-the-scenes less kind of less of a title sponsorship, I don't know. But the fact that there is no title sponsor, from what it seems this year, is obviously a negative. And the fact that it's an amateur league in the first place, it's not exactly an awful lot of prize money or any prize money knocking around, so that's going to be a bit of a blow. But I don't know exactly what's going to happen. The FAI is still kind of in flux at the moment, and hopefully some of that money that's come in, the settlement with the government and Bank of Ireland will open up a little bit of funding to help sustain that national league and bring it on. But at the moment, I think this year certainly and maybe future years will be all about consolidating and just keeping as much consistency as they can in it, and hopefully not losing any more teams.
No, fair enough. This was the under-19s league didn't stick around either. So that's already one loss in a sense, although probably not as much under their watch. Fair to say, there's maybe been little talk of the WNL on, apart from structural changes on the sort of plans for the future. I think I said to you, I could be wrong, but I think Steph Roach was one who went to speak with Kieran Lucid and that whole group when they were sort of being mooted as possible new FAI and how to improve things and give her thoughts and expertise on that. I don't think she was ever permanently involved with that group. But if we're talking things like, I just, you know, maybe this is a silly question, you can correct me if it is, but when we're talking things like All-Ireland League and as you said, whatever levels of sponsorship and funding we're able to bring in with whatever changes and implements this supposed plan can have down the line, presumably the women's game comes under that as well. And it's not just, as I said, reshuffling of the league. Presumably, if there was to be an All-Ireland League, there'd have to be a bit of scope for, you know, an All-Ireland League on the women's side of the game as well.
I'd imagine so, but there's so much, I suppose, water to go under the bridge there already. And I think in the sense of an amateur league, it might not be the worst thing in the world to, you know, maintain those two regional divisions rather than having one league, particularly when you're looking at, you know, amateur players committing to travel all over the country. You know, it's bad enough going from, you know, Galway to Dublin, or going from Limerick to Athlone or whatever, without bringing in, you know, Belfast and Fermanagh and Derry and everything into it. So I don't know about that, but certainly any All-Ireland League discussion, I think, in order to have any sort of credibility, I think would need to represent both the men's game and the women's game. But if in future that's still maintained, kind of a regional basis, that might be the best way forward. But you know, as I kind of said earlier, I think it's an awful long way down the road. I mean, if any sort of change is made, it'll be driven by the men's game and by the two associations. So I think that's more of a kind of a, you know, a long-term pipe dream than anything else at the moment.
No, fair enough. Right, well, tell you what, stick with us. We'll be back in a few minutes after we hear these pair of interviews to talk about the teams and the upcoming fixtures. So first we're going to hear from Graham Kelly. Dave, you got a chance to speak to Graham, and also Laura Heffernan. So we'll get to these two pieces. We'll be back to preview some of the games in a moment.
And you're joined by Daniel Corcoran. Daniel, professional footballer from Dublin.
Just outside the city, Phibsborough, Scotland.
Right. Who'd you play for?
Bohemians FC.
The Bohemians.
Might have 189 not written down. Oh, sorry, it's gone. Oh,
Corcoran. Daniel?
I think I have 829. 100s minus 9 times by 9.
Is 819.
And add the 10.
Very nicely done, 829.
Well done. And George Corcoran.
Start with a consonant, please.
Consonant, please, Carl.
So, Graham, preparations for the new season going well. From what it looks like, you brought in Leto Griffin, but apart from that, it seems to be a very consistent squad from last season.
Yeah, no, preparations are going well. We brought in O'Leary, we brought in Aoife Brophy, Shauna Carroll's back in, who didn't play last year at all, you know, through injury. She was in with her ACL. We brought in Mel Clark, we brought in Amy Murphy, so we had Katie Malone. So we brought in some new players, you know, girls that would have played with different clubs around, like Katie Malone came from John Bosco, Amy Murphy would have been down with Newtown Rangers, and that Mel Clark was with Shankill. So we brought in some good young players, and again, it's just keeping things fresh and competition for places.
And pre-season's been going well. I know you beat Treat United, the old Limerick FC, on the weekend. Looking back on the entire pre-season, how do you think it's gone?
Yeah, it's gone okay. Probably a lot happier with this year's pre-season than last year's, as in we got a lot of games in this year. Last year being new to the league and wasn't really sure who to approach for games and that, but obviously getting to know the managers throughout the year. We've had some really good games. You know, we played Wexford Utes. Obviously played 3D United, we played a Westwood League selection, you know, we were over, we played Celtic, we played UCD Boys. So we've had some good games in there as well, you know, and keeping everyone sharp and on the toes, getting minutes in the legs.
And was that the UCD 17s or 19s?
It was the 15s, the Boys 15s we played, okay. That was just before we went to Celtic, because we were only back training 2 weeks before the invite came to go to Celtic. So we needed a game, and the UCD boys 15s of fairness came and played us, which was brilliant for our girls, because obviously the pace they moved the ball was really quick, and it got us nice and sharp.
I didn't want to touch on the Celtic point too much, but you brought it up there. I know you have a few contacts there yourself. Was it kind of personal contacts? How that kind of came up?
I just know a couple of people over there, it was just good people involved. Gordon Cage, the business development manager in Celtic, I sort of got to know Gordon now over the last couple of months, which was great. Willie McNabb, who is in the academy as well, so two really good lads there, and that David Haley is now assistant manager. And it was brilliant. We went over there, we had a really good time, really good to go over and play against a professional team, full-time setup. And the invite's there for us to go back again, so it's fantastic. It's a bit of a relationship hopefully being built there that we can hopefully build on in the future.
And obviously the likes of PMS and Shelburne would be training at a fairly close to professional level, but actually going over there, professional facilities, a full-time professional team, all the rest and all that entails, is that kind of a new experience?
Yeah, it was really good. It was a really, really good experience going over. Obviously, playing against a club like Celtic, they're a massive club, so for the girls to go over, and the night before we played, their first team manager, Fran Alonso, who was the head of the women's academy at the time, David Haley, their assistant manager, they came down to the hotel and they done a presentation to the girls on Celtic Football Club and how they are now going professional. So it's brilliant for our girls to get an insight into how a club like Celtic are trying to go professional, and then see what we're doing here. We're not a million miles away from it. Obviously, financially, we're a million miles behind, but what we're doing on the pitch is very similar to what they do over there.
I understand that Niamh Pryor was training with them for a few days beforehand. Was she playing with them on the night, or was she playing with you, or...?
Yeah, no, Lee went over for a week training, so she trained there for a week, but on the day then she played with us again against Celtic. So again, great experience for Lee to go over and train in a professional full-time setup, training twice a day, and then obviously get to play with us against Celtic on the Saturday was brilliant for her.
Dave's obviously a senior player for you. You've done very well in the off-season, as I mentioned, with the consistency, bringing keeping Catherine Cronin, obviously your captain, the likes of Eve Badana, Fiona Donnelly, Niamh Pryor. Is it a decent base of experience in the squad now to sort of develop from?
Yeah, and you're saying there, like Fiona, Eve, Catherine, Rachel Doyle, they're experienced players, but Niamh Pryor and Fiona are only 21. Mm. But they are, because we're so young, they are experienced players. Obviously, Eve Bandana, exceptional goalkeeper, brilliant around the squad. Catron club captain and Rachel Doyle, vice captain. It's brilliant to have these girls that will help the younger girls develop. We can see now some of the girls that played last year and how they've pushed on now again this year. So it's great to see them,
Moving into a new league this season, three new teams, or two if you don't count Treaty United as a new team, but a 9-team league, probably going to be a bit, a bit irregular in terms of games, but are you looking forward to it? Do you think the new format will benefit the players?
Yeah, look, it's great to get more teams in. We said it all along, we try to get more teams into the top division, playing teams 3 and 4 times get a bit monotonous, so I know we're probably down on games because we're only playing teams home and away, and there is gaps in there, but I think it's probably the right step. It's just about developing the league, and hopefully this time next year there might be one or two more in. Like, ideally if we could get that league up to 12 teams, it would be brilliant.
Just looking forward to your first game. I know it's Wexford Youth away, which you recently played them away already. Have you learned anything from that experience?
In the pre-season game, we're not going to show our hand. They're not going to show our hand. It was actually a really good game. The conditions last Saturday were very tough. Obviously, we had a bit of the wind were in there. It was Gale Force wind. We were beaten 1-0, but it was a tight game. Wexford are a very good side. They're really good. Obviously, they've lost Rihanna, but they've quality all over the park. We know we're in for a really tough time next Saturday evening.
It doesn't seem like the Shield is coming back next year, so as you kind of touched on earlier, you'll have less games, and there will be kind of fellow periods, I think, in and around the mid-season break. If you don't make the League Cup semi-finals, you might have 5 weeks off. Is there kind of a contingency plan to make sure you have enough games during that period?
Yeah, you play 3 league matches and then you don't play for 2 weeks, so all the good work you've done, you can lose it again. But like you're saying, come up to the midweek break, the mid-season break, should I say, we've obviously 3 weeks off for the break, but then potentially we might not play for 2 weeks before that. So our plan is to keep going up to the end of June, and then we'll give the girl 10 days off and we'll be back in training and then prepare for the second part of the season.
Just in terms of the games themselves, I know you were playing at 7 p.m. on a Saturday night last year. The year before it was 2 p.m. on a Sunday. Have you confirmed them kind of times and stuff for the season coming up?
Yeah, it's 6:20 p.m. on a Saturday evening this year, so just a little bit earlier on the Saturday evening, but it's still going to be in Jackson Park. And then hopefully in the summer a couple of games then UCD Ball.
Okay, looking ahead to the season, I know you've kind of mentioned taking one game at a time, but have you set any kind of realistic goals or maybe unrealistic goals for the season?
You know, we spoke to the squad about our goals as a unit, as a team, and they know what we expect. We expect to hopefully push on a little bit more because the girls are used to playing with each other in last year was new to a lot of the girls stepping up from 7 days, but they've all got a year under the belt and then obviously we made a lot of new signings in the transfer window, so them girls will hopefully be more settled in now as well. I just hopefully we can compete more, you know, that's all we can ask from the girls and see them develop as footballers, because that's what it's all about at the end of the day.
Yeah, so just in terms of the season coming up, you were very close last year. What's changed in the interim, I suppose?
We felt a little bit unlucky last year just to finish so close and not come away with the league in the end, but look, I think that prepared the girls even better this season, that they'll be hungry to go and get it over the line this year.
And squad-wise, I know maybe a couple of players have left. I see Kieran Grant has come in. Is it kind of, is it more or less same team as last year, though?
So Kieran's come in, obviously. She brings a lot of experience with her, and, you know, she's settled in really well. And we brought a couple of players off from the 17 squad from last year. So, like, the Courtney Maguire, the goalkeeper, and Taylor White have all signed full-time as senior players now. So, you know, it's pretty much as was with a few little additions. But, yeah, we're very, very happy with the squad now at the moment.
And I suppose you're the same as most teams in the league in the sense that you have a couple of experienced players, but really you're sort of relying on those kind of 17, 18, 19-year-old players to really step up.
Yeah, I mean, if you look through the squad, obviously, you've Jamie Finn now in with senior internationals, and, you know, the likes of Paul Slattery, Jeff Heath and Jeff Garrigan, all those players, they have loads of experience, and hopefully they'll be able to bring the younger players up and, you know, look after them and get them ready for what lies ahead in the season.
Your eyes will probably be trained on the other two, the top three, I suppose, Wexford and Piemont. Piemont have really gone at it hard over the off-season. Maybe Wexford have a bit more continuity, but in terms of, I suppose, targets in the league, is it still those two that'll be the main competition?
It's always hard to tell. I mean, at Lorne have prepared very well pre-season. They've had some good pre-season games, and, you know, Galway, you know, they're always capable of taking big results throughout the season. So, I mean, I suppose it's great for the league, the more competitive it can be. You'd have to say on paper, obviously team enter the favourites, but, you know, you'd be hoping that the teams around second and third place will, you know, look to take some results off them as well.
And obviously the format's changing this year. There's two and a half new teams maybe coming into the league, less games. Is that going to be a factor when it comes to the end of the season?
I suppose for the league it is. There's a little bit less room for error. I suppose last year you could win, lose and draw a game against one of the top teams and still go on and win the league. So the fact that it's only a home and away once, there's definitely less room for error, and it'll be the team that's the most consistent will probably lift the trophy at the end.
And it's probably a bit fairer in the sense that you're not having two away games as some teams.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it tends to even itself out during the season. I suppose if you're Galway or Limerick, the teams that have to travel consistently, just to have that one away fixture against some teams will be a big benefit for them. But, you know, look, you just take it as it comes now, and, you know, the home and away just evens it out a little bit, I think.
Yeah, and it is just 16 games, so as you say, it's a very small margin of error. But just in terms of the squad themselves, have they kind of set a realistic goal? Like, is the title the big one that you want to get, or is it just a case of, as you say, taking it as it comes?
Every player in the squad is competitive, and, you know, and the management as well, and everybody wants to go out and compete on all fronts and try to win as much silverware as possible. But look, it won't be easy. Piemont will definitely be up there. Wexford have proven themselves over the last 4 or 5 years, so. Like I said, it'll be the most consistent team now that goes all the way.
Just one final question in terms of the squad. You can keep this to yourself if you kind of want to keep it under your hat a little bit, but just in terms of the squad, is everybody kind of fully fit going into the first game?
At the moment, Kingle Health, and hopefully, obviously, we've a lot of players away on international duty now between the 19s and the seniors, so hopefully they'll all come back in one piece and they'll be ready for Saturday.
All right. And I suppose it's just when you see players like Stephanie Roach coming back to the league and still being able to have their international ambitions, and obviously Jessica and Jamie have been in recent squads, does it show that the league is still kind of, you know, at a level where you can still, players can still realise their international dreams, I suppose?
Yeah, I think the league has improved massively over recent seasons, and it's great to have a lot of home-based players in. I think Stephanie coming back obviously shows that the quality of football is here. And you know, players will get out and they'll want to see her playing with what she's done in the last couple of years. So I suppose the big end down the line is to offer players more that they can stay here in this country and make the league better.
Gareth Penrose isn't exactly Alexander Graham Bell, but the Dubliner did bring Irish football into the modern era with the establishment of extratime.ie.
Hello, Extra Time. Thanks for your support. You are the 12th man.
So in some ways, Penrose is a pioneer. The website has evolved to include weighty opinion pieces, coverage of women's football, and a regular podcast.
Greg Bolger, as a player of some technical ability, that some is probably a bit disingenuous to yourself.
You're strong.
Well, here's something back, Mr. Penrose. Thank you.
And I don't do it so they turn around and go, oh, thank you, David. Thank you for the laughs. I do it so one day someone will go, there goes David Brent. I must remember to thank him.
In both of those interviews, Dave, there's a bit of chat sort of about the standard coming up overall. I wonder how you think the introduction of a few of these new teams, or somewhat new teams, as we said already, is going to affect that.
Yeah, I kind of touched on it earlier in terms of, I think there is, I've spoken to a lot of people recently, Olivia O'Toole, the former, Ireland's top scorer and top
pass maker
ever. She just,
by the way,
She just took over at Patsy Wye. They're playing in the new Eastern Women's Football League, which is a merger of the NGL and the Dublin Women's Soccer League. So, you know, there's positive things going on even under the top level. But what comes up in conversation with everybody is the fact that, you know, once players hit kind of 16, 17, when they're finished with the 17s National League, there is a big gap there between, you know, 17s football and senior football. A lot of players are capable of making it, but they do need the opportunity. And I think just having those couple of extra clubs in there, even if maybe for a few years they are a bit weaker, they don't have the experience maybe, I think it will be a positive overall in terms of their development. So I think there is a need there, and I think it is being filled now with the extra teams in there. Obviously, having fewer games, it might be a bit of an issue, but I do think there is a, you know, this is something that was needed because there just weren't enough opportunities for all the players who were coming through. So that's good to see from that end.
Will it help close the gap, do you think? I know, I suppose the question I'm more leaning towards is not actually raising a quality overall, but will it help sort of close the gap and make the league a bit more competitive, do you think? Because obviously we're going to touch on teams and you know, title rivals and all that kind of stuff, but there's a bit of a drop off then at a certain point in the league where teams are just a fair shake off. I mean, Kilkenny last year was had a miserable old year, you know.
Yeah, well, Kilkenny have kind of always been since they started. They've had trouble retaining players. They've had trouble retaining coaches, and they always seem to be a bit off. I think the new teams coming in will address that a bit. I know. I was talking to the new Bowls coach, Sean Byrne, who, you know, he's an experienced Premier Division player. He played in the 91 Cup final with Shamrock Rovers, ironically. So you know, he's quite enthusiastic about the team. He's brought, you know, maybe half the squad to come up from their fairly successful under 17s team, and they brought in a few kind of a few experienced League of Ireland players that maybe have dropped out in the last few years but are coming back in now. So that's good to see. You know, the likes of Niamh Kennedy, the defender, used to play for Shamrock Rovers and they're in the league. So there is a bit of experience coming in there as well. But Athlone Town with Tommy Hewitt is the manager of their new team now. And just from speaking to the different managers, I think everybody is sort of looking at them and going, you know, they've had a few good results in pre-season. I think a couple of people have been down to look at them and they say that they're, you know, they're a good team. They were very strong in under-17s football as well. They have a good few players who are playing in the kind of under the Irish representative teams coming up the ages. So there's a lot of kind of, I suppose, talent there that they seem to have signed well as well in terms of senior players. So I think they might be one of the surprising packages of the year. And Treaty United, I suppose, is basically the same team from what I can see. Dave Rooney and Irene Hare are still managing the team. So there's, you know, apart from the name and the logo and maybe the colours, there's a lot of continuity there as well. You know, in the past couple of years, maybe with the the situation at Limerick. They've lost a few players to different teams from around the area, but hopefully having a bit more of a sustainable plan to go forward, they'll be better at hanging on to players and be able to develop some very talented young players there. So I think if you look at the league over the past couple of years, it's always been sort of three tiers. It's been the top three, Shells, Wexford and Piemont, and then there's been a group below them, Galway, Cork, maybe DLR Waves as well, and then there was kind of Limerick and Kilkenny. So there was kind of a three tiers. I don't see that happening so much this year. I think it'll be more a case where the top three sort of run away with it, and the teams below them might all be of a similar standard. Galway and Cork probably the ones with the most experience who can maybe push that gap a little bit this year. But I think it'll be a competitive league. It'll be more competitive outside of the top three anyway, I think. I don't think you'll see too many kind of, you know, 7-0s or 8-0s or whatever between the top teams and the lower down teams. And I think there'll be fewer blowouts between those lower teams as well. So I think it will be more competitive, and it's going to be just from a spectator point of view, it's going to be maybe a little bit better, and maybe it might encourage a few people to kind of get back in and see a few more games.
Would you say Piemont are likely to defend their title? Just looking at the team, I mean, there's four sort of current internationals, with Steph Roach returning and now being called up, of course. But you're talking Claire Walsh and Eve Farrelly and of course, Arne O'Gorman back in the fold on the international side as well. So you're talking four internationals, and then, of course, a couple of signings, Alana McAvoy from Shells. And I suppose later in the season, it'll be exciting to see Tegan Ruddy get back involved. She's back over from the S, but I read it'll be more like halfway through the season when she's back in recovering from injury.
Yeah, I wonder where you read that, Dick.
Yeah,
Just
read a lot of your work. I read a lot of your work, David. It's good.
Thanks. I listen to some of your work. In terms of if you're looking at the squads, you know, you look at Wexford, they've lost Rhianna Jarrett, which is going to be absolutely massive considering she's been, you know, probably the, along with Amber Barrett, the best goal scorer in the league over the past 5 years. So that's going to be a huge loss for them. They do have Ellen Malloy there, who is very young, but she's extremely promising. And I think, you know, she might be ready, maybe not this season, but in future seasons, kind of take over the mantle of, you know, the player that they really rely on for goals, even if she's a very much a different player from Rhianna. But I think Wexford, they'll always be competitive because they just have that core of players, like Kylie Murphy's, the Adele Kennedy's, players like that, who are just, you know, as close to professional as you can be in your job, and they're never going to be too far away. Shelburne, hard to tell. They seem to have held on to most of their players, the kind of underage players. They have the, you know, the likes of Jessica Zhu and Emily Whelan, you know, very promising young players. It appears that Noelle Murray won't be there next year, but they have brought back in another international, the former Kira Grant, who is going to be a huge addition for them after having a very good season back in football up in the Northern Irish League. But I think if you're looking at paper, you have to say Piemont. They lost Amber Barrett last year, but if you can bring in Stephanie Roach, that's, you know, that's as close to as good a forward as you can buy in. Alana McAvoy, very talented player, didn't get as many minutes in a very competitive Shelburne squad as she would have liked, but she's very young as well, and she's very talented. And, you know, I think I know there were a couple of other teams around Dublin who were really interested in her, but she was obviously attracted over to the champions. And as you mentioned there, Tegan Ruddy, she is still recovering from a very nasty injury, but, you know, she's another one. You mentioned the four internationals there. It'll probably be five by the time she gets back up and running in a year or so. So, you know, I just can't really see past the Piemont at the moment, especially they brought in Clive Doyle as well from Galway, one of the best midfielders in the league. So, you know, they've an awful lot of talent there, and I don't think they're going to be, it's going to be hard to stop them this year, put it that way. But I think the league might be a little bit more competitive than it was last year in terms of the teams outside the top three.
Is that the advantage Piemont have, I suppose, not only strengthening but weakening some of those around them? Because as you're saying, there might be a bit of transition around Wexford. Would you expect it to be Piemont Shells again sort of fighting it out, or is there another one or two you could maybe get involved if it is a little bit more even this year?
Well, you're making it out like there's some sort of Chelsea of Irish football. I don't think they're going around weakening other teams.
Chelsea play all the youth players now, as you well know.
Okay, Celtic then. But I know you didn't want to mention them, but just in terms, you know, I do think that Piemont, they just on paper, they look stronger. They do have a very deep squad. I think probably 24, 25 players, which I think would probably be the most in the league. You know, they're going to be able to cope with more or less anything that comes at them. They've got some very talented players coming up from the 17s as well. Del Doherty, the captain, Becky Watkins as well. So there's a, you know, there's an awful lot of talent coming through at Piemont, as there always has been. And now they've got, you know, a couple of extra experienced players that maybe they didn't have last year, which will only bode well for them. But yeah, I can't really see past Piemont at the moment, just on paper. But who knows what can happen, you know. You know, things happen during the season. Players aren't always available and stuff like that. But I don't see anybody at the moment really challenging those top three. I think the gap, while it hasn't gotten significantly bigger, I think the teams just below that level aren't quite ready to push up yet. But yeah, I think there might be, as I kind of mentioned earlier, I think there might be a few less blowouts. The Piemont are travelling up to Cork on the first day. They beat them 8-0 on the last day of the season to seal the league. I don't foresee it being, you know, anything like that. I think it'd be a lot closer of a game. So
speaking about Cork, Dave, I suppose just before we look at the fixtures, Cork and Galway probably too. We didn't really mention too many of there. Would you expect it sort of for them to be, as you said, in that kind of above maybe the teams just at that bottom tier? Is it going to be sort of Galway, Cork, middling?
It's hard to tell because, as I mentioned earlier, I think Athlone are the team that a few people are talking about in terms of, right, you know, these are going to be pretty strong. But Cork, they've had a very young squad that's been slowly developing. They brought in Savannah McCarthy, came back last year, just a huge signing for them. You know, they do have a couple of extra sort of experienced players in there as well, but they've been nicely taking along for a couple of years now, and I think they're going to continue to get better. Galway maybe surprised a few people in terms of how good they were last year, but of course losing Syed is a big loss for them. And you know, Billy Cleary is a, you know, hugely talented and very respected manager, so I think he'll always have them in good nick. And they have a couple of kind of you know, internationals or former internationals in there, like Chloe Singleton and Maeve de Burke. So they're always going to be good, but I just think that maybe the jump up from you know, that second tier to challenging maybe for titles is too much for them. But certainly, you know, any team outside the top three, they're all going to be targeting a good cup run, because with two cups to play for, there's plenty of opportunity for silverware. Even though over the past couple of years, since Cork won the FAI Cup final a couple of years ago, it's all been shared out between those top three. But you know, if things are a bit more competitive, I can definitely see a couple of those teams maybe muscling in and trying to get to a cup final.
Fair enough. Right, let's have a look at the fixtures then coming up. I'll just read these out, Dave, before I give you a bit of a chance to give us a prediction, which you love doing. If you're thinking, if you're able to get along, I'll give you the details. Bowes Athlone, Oscar Traynor Centre, 2 o'clock on the Saturday. Shells Galway, also 2 o'clock on the Saturday, Tolka. And then Wexford Utes DLR Waves, Ferry Carrick Park, 6:30 on the Saturday. Cork and Piemont, as you mentioned, Dave, revisiting, hopefully not of that 8-0, is 2 o'clock on the Sunday. So quick thoughts on these games, Dave?
Yeah, do you want me to take them in turn?
Yeah, well, go on. Start wherever you like. I think you kind of already touched on Piemont Cork, so maybe start with that one, because that'll be interesting to see if the you know, title defender is able to start pick up where they left off. You don't think so, as you said.
I think you've misquoted me.
Well,
there.
Well, no, you
think,
don't. Maybe not quite to that extent. 8-0 is asking a lot.
Yeah, well, you mentioned also the four internationals. Obviously, those players are going to be away in Montenegro until kind of the end of the week. So I don't know if that will affect them, but the fact that they have such a deep squad, you know, the likes of Eleanor Ryan Doyle and you know, players like that, Lauren O'Callaghan, plenty of Louise Corrigan, plenty of, you know, very experienced, good players who are, you know, young but very experienced. So, you know, I think they'll still probably have too much for Cork, but who knows what can happen on an opening day. And yeah, it's I'd lean towards Piemont certainly, but you know, I wouldn't count Cork out either.
Shells and Galway then?
Yeah, that's the interesting one, because Shells dropped 2 points against Galway early in the season last year at home, and that turned out to be probably the 2 points that cost them the title. So there might be a little bit of a score to be settled there. As I mentioned, Galway have lost 5-2, but they, you know, they're a very solid outfit. They have some very talented players. They play a good style of football. They vary it up, but they, you know, they can play it through the feet, and they can look very good at times. So I don't know, maybe with Shells, maybe just in a little bit of a, I don't know, what would you say?
Transition, maybe?
From last season, maybe. Not transition, but the fact that they were so close last year, I don't know if that will affect them. I'd say Shells will nick it, but again, I'm prevaricating on all these, but I think that Galway have a little bit of a chance.
You probably think Wexford strong selections for their first home game of the season?
Yeah, I think, you know, I would have seen a lot of DLR over the last couple of years anyway, and I kind of know their strengths and weaknesses. I think they will be stronger next year, certainly. They have got that sort of a band of experience that maybe they wouldn't have had in over the last couple of years. They have, used the word band, Eve Badana in goal. You know, she's probably arguably the best goalkeeper in the league if she's able to play. Which is the issue in terms of she hasn't been able to play as much in recent years through work commitments and stuff like that. So she's able to commit to every game. I think that'll be a huge addition for them. You know, they have an awful lot of very young players, but they also have that bit of experience core with the likes of Rachel Doyle and Catherine Cronin. So I think there'll be an improvement on last year, but whether they can kick on right away up to the level of Wexford, I wouldn't be too sure. But you know, I think that they'll give them a good game out there, but I think on this occasion, I think Wexford will be too strong.
And lastly, Bowes Athlone, two new teams in action there. How do you see? I presume you're going to be leaning towards Athlone for this one.
Well, I haven't seen any of them, so I'm going purely on what I've been told by other people, that Athlone are quite good. So, you know, it's in Dublin. It's Bowes' first game. Who knows what will happen? You know, it's having home advantage. Might go in their favour, but I just don't know enough about the squads to actually make a confident prediction. So
that's good. You know, glad we've done purely, this. Though.
Yeah, purely in terms of what I've heard, I'd expect Athlone to put up a very good contest away from home.
Dave, thanks so much for taking the call. Best of luck to you with the ongoing self quarantine.
Cheers, thanks.
If you see Dave at these games, don't be worried. That is just a gag. Thank you very much for listening in. And
can you bring me some toilet roll?
Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back to you next week, hopefully.